Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, the Wisconsin Eye and WisPolitics look at this week in the Capitol. But first, WisEye was there. It's a shorty, but it's a goodie. Governor Scott Walker was asked about tariffs on Wisconsin soybeans, especially relevant given the announcement by China today. Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley says Foxconn has enormous potential. His words for jobs for African Americans in Milwaukee. And look closely, because what you'll see is seven Democratic candidates for governor holding up green cards indicating yes to answers posed by the Milwaukee group Wisdom. Wish I was there.
Governor Walker, are you or is Kinkelman at all worried about the recently imposed tariffs and the production of soybeans and what sort of effect that might have on soybean productions, particularly here in Walworth County?
The best way to deal with that is, I think, more than government policy, it's through commerce. If you do more business, if you make more investments, if you encourage more foreign direct investment, that's the best way with a trade balance to be more equalized no matter what country you are. That's the best way to deal with some of the issues that are really the driving force of President Trump's policies, are trying to level that balance off. I understand and appreciate his intentions. I just think some of the best ways to do that are by building a bigger incentive to make foreign direct investment.
I think the deal with Foxconn has enormous potential if we want it to. I think it could help us address a whole lot of issues in the city of Milwaukee, in the African American community. We have embarrassingly high unemployment. There has never been a better opportunity.
If you are elected governor, would you veto any legislation that would create a penalty for sanctuary cities in Wisconsin?
Clinton, McCabe, Mitchell, Gronick, Royce, Reinhout, and Wax, all yes.
Last time we failed because every time we have an election, we go out to the polls, we shake our hands, we go to drink, go sit down in our living room and watch TV and forget about it. Well, you can't do that anymore. You can't not afford to sit down on your laurels anymore. We have the ability right now to make America great once and for all.
Two special elections last week. Let's focus on the Senate District 1. Hmm? Democratic Caleb Frostman won. He's the first Democrat since 1976 when the late Democratic senator died and Alan Lassay won to represent the first Senate district. He got, we're rounding off unofficially, 51%. Andre Jock, 49%. But I was intrigued because you go so deep into the numbers. You highlighted the big drop-off from the Trump victory in this district. Talk to me about that.
Trump won by 17 points. Really interesting to me was that there's a double whammy for Jock in this race, and that was that Door County came in and accounted for a higher percent of the overall vote in this race than it normally does, and it went to Frostman like with 60-some percent of the vote. So that's a sign to people I talked to that Jock is the candidate we thought he was going to be, and for Republicans, it's not a good thing. Somebody who was not going to be a great fundraiser, who has this kind of band of supporters in his assembly district, but limited appeal outside of that kind of area, especially in an environment that favors Democrats right now. And that's what you saw play out in that race. Frostman went up big numbers in Door County. He kind of actually, Jock underperformed in his own assembly district compared to where he was in re-election 2 years ago. And you get a Democratic win in a Republican seat.
Well, before we look at some of the reaction to that, it's interesting to me because now Jacques has a primary against Bill Nada, Washington Island military vet. I talked to him on the phone yesterday trying to get him to do a sit down for a campaign interview, but his job conflict. And he said, yeah, I'm still in it. So it's Jacques and Nada on August 14th for the right to go up against Frostman on November 6th.
Yeah. The questions that I have are, one, is Bill Nada for real? Can he raise money?
He's a first-time candidate.
Two, will Republicans in Madison get involved in that primary, because there was a perception they kind of played a little bit in the primary in May with Alex Renard getting support from this outside group, that there was some kind of like preference for Renard. Well, they didn't get Renard through. Jacques got there and he lost. So is there a case to be made to play in that primary and push for Nauta as an alternative? Two, this race had turned out, it's about 37% of what it was in 2014.
Yep.
So we're going to have Scott Walker at the top of the ticket, Timmy Baldwin at the top of the ticket. We're going to have much higher turnout come November. Scott Walker has basically started to already camp out in the Green Bay market. All right? He needs to do well there. Will Scott Walker, putting so much emphasis on that area, help, whether it's Nauta or Andre Jacques this fall, for Frostman, keep pounding the doors in Door County, mm-hmm. get your butt into Outagamie and Calumet and Kewaunee, Brown County, places that are a little more Republican, mm-hmm. keep pounding the doors. You will not have a record when you're up for election, but you have incumbency a little bit. So you've got to do whatever you can to maximize that and keep pushing your name ID. Then we'll see. For Democrats, they have to hold this seat and find two more to flip the majority.
And I'm going to look quickly at the reaction. Here's what Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said about Mr. Frostman's win. With low turnout in the special election, it proved yet again that this was a complete waste of taxpayer money. Coming back to the point you made, there were about 28,000 votes cast Tuesday in Senate District 1. I looked it up, and you're right, 77,000 votes cast in 2014 when former Senator Frank Lissay won with 61% of the vote. One more reaction, Eric Holder, former U.S. Attorney General. Republicans gerrymandered this district, but the citizens of Wisconsin are clearly speaking out this year to demand a state government that better represents their values. JR, I think Holder overstated that. I have looked at that district and how it's been shaped for like 30 years, and it's generally been Door plus Kewaunee. I just think he overstated it.
Well, to Eric Holder, every district in Wisconsin is gerrymandered, right? That's part of the case they're trying to make.
And we're waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court decision any day now.
Waiting patiently.
Yes. Then, also on Tuesday, the Republicans held on to the 42nd Assembly District. John Plummer got about 53%. Those are unofficial totals. Ann Groves Lloyd, 47%. I didn't have this as any big surprise. You?
In talking to people leading into Tuesday, both sides felt Democrats had a better chance in the 1st and the 42nd, which is why we saw groups like For Our Future, Eric Holder's group, League of Conservation Voters, Greater Wisconsin, going into the 1st with much more resources than we saw in the 42nd. Mm-hmm. There was a better opportunity there. The other thing about this is these are Republican seats. Don't forget that. These are not seats that Democrats should be winning a normal year. Now, the question is 2018 a normal year?
Yeah.
And if not, how unnormal is it?
Right.
Robin Voss is pushing very hard the notion that this win means there's no blue wave in the assembly.
Voss said, let me quote that, Democrats not having a victory tonight, Tuesday night, goes to show the formula for assembly Republicans of good organization, candidates, and messaging works. JR, but you quoted Voss as saying, we pulled out all the stops on that.
Yeah.
I did a candidate interview yesterday with Republican Rep. Ron Tussler. He said he was doing doors, even though, you know, his district is...
Oh, yeah.
He was doing doors in the 42nd for 4 or 5 hours.
It was so all Voss hands on deck.
All hands on deck.
Robin Voss did not want the talk of Blue Wave get a toehold in his chamber. He wanted to knock that down. And if you look, the second RAC declared victory, and I tweeted that Tuesday night, he was on Twitter, John Niger was on Twitter, other members of that caucus on Twitter, saying this is the blue trickle, right? They want to knock that down as much as they can. Here's the caveat from Democrats, though. They will tell you there are 21 seats in the assembly that are better for them at the top of the ticket than this one is. And that's what's kind of, people may miss a little bit in these analysis of these races. I've heard the split decision being description being criticized because these are not swing seats. They're Republican seats, like 54% Republican seats.
Keith Ripp, in 2016, I looked it up, got 57% of the vote. Plummer got 53. And the Gordon Hitz response here, the blue wave happened. It just happened with a Republican who endorsed the Democratic agenda. Mr. Hintz, I think you kind of overstated it a little bit.
And remember, politics is perception. And Robin Voss has pushed that perception to try and knock down that when people look at where to invest this fall, they go, okay, there's a path for Democrats in the Senate to win back the majority. The governor's race is going to be maybe tight. Robin Voss is going to say, hey, we are a safe bet, a safe investment for your donations because there's no blue wave in the assembly. You know, that's he's going to push. And we can be a backstop in case things go awry for Republicans, these other two chambers.
Now, let's talk about the Elections Commission and the decision it made in terms of who's on and who's off the ballot last Monday. First of all, two Democratic candidates for governor, Annie Gronick and Dana Walks, they're on the ballot. Their challenges were dismissed. U.S. Senate candidate Kevin Nicholson, no surprise there, he's on the ballot.
A lot of this stuff is just people probing and trying to get a headline. I mean, there's not the challenges for the GOP against the two Republican candidates were pretty much dismissed out of hand. It's not really very serious. Same with Nicholson. Like, the Nicholson complaint was what? He had people from out of state collecting signatures. There's nothing illegal about that.
Yeah. And then 4th District Congressional candidate Timothy Rogers is also on the ballot, having survived a challenge, as is 29th State Senate District candidate, Democrat Richard Pulker. Now let's look at who was tossed off. Four Assembly candidates, Jim Duncan, Maria Villarreal in Milwaukee, and Thomas Lager. But now let's focus in on Charisse Daniels. Let's take a few minutes and look at the staff recommendation on the challenge to her nomination papers. Let's listen to the staff recommendation.
We'll move on to the second case before us today, which is Jenny Toffness' complaint against Charisse Daniels, candidate for representative to the Assembly District 37.
The complaint alleges that four pages specifically, pages 5, 8, 11, and 14 of the candidate's pages were fraudulently obtained, and representative Jagler, who is candidate Daniels' potential opponent, had noticed that an individual on the nomination papers was one of his kind of longtime supporters. So he had called this individual and said, "Hey, did you sign candidate Daniels' papers?" And he said, "No." In his kind of investigation here, he was able to attain 15 affidavits. You know, they stated under oath that they did not sign the nomination papers for a candidate Daniels on the date indicated next to their name, nor did they sign her nomination papers on any other date. The commission staff believed that information had met the burden of proof, that there was some clear and convincing evidence here that those individuals had not signed those nomination papers, and that's where the recommendation to initially strike those signatures comes from.
The Republican incumbent in that district, John Jagler, went and got 15 affidavits from people whose name were on the nomination papers who signed an affidavit saying, "I did not do that." And that's also being investigated by the local sheriff's office. Mm-hmm. So she may have other problems, as you once said,
bigger problems. The upshot from what happened here is that you have John Jagger's unopposed re-election this fall. Amanda Stuck, Democrat from Lapton, unopposed. Chris Taylor, Democrat from Madison, unopposed. And Joe Acosta Zamarripa, Democrat from Milwaukee, only has a Republican opponent now in a very, very, very Democratic district.
The Elections Commission also announced the results of drawing from a hat the order of the Democrats on the August 14th primary ballot. Very, very intriguing. Mm-hmm. You have Andy Gronick first, Matt Flynn, Tony Evers, Josh Paid, Mike McCabe, Malin Mitchell, Kelda Helen Royce, Paul Sogdahl, Kathleen Vinehout, Dana Walks. How significant it is if you're in the top 1, 2, 3 when voters, August 14th might be a hot day, maybe the kid's crying?
I guess you'd rather be first than last. But the reality is, come mid-July, we should see some kind of paid media campaign from the real competitors, okay? Josh Paid is a little-known Kenosha attorney. I don't know if I have the resources to put up an ad campaign. Being fourth in the ballot order.
Mr. Paid is number four.
I don't think that means he's going to be a top four finisher, right? August 14th.
Yeah.
But look for the paid media campaign. That's what we're looking to see. Who gets up on the air? Who has the resources? Who can build that operation to kind of put their name out there for a solid month? That could be the difference in this race.
And there must not have been joy in both the Walks and Vinehout's campaign at what's horse racing term? Coming out from the 9 and 10 hole?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not great. You know, like we've talked before, Tony Evers has built up name ID from years of being in public office. So does
Paul
Sogdahl.
All right? Number eight.
Everybody else pretty much has to earn it through paid media, working the campaign trail. They've got a little more of a task between now and August 14th than those two.
But I'm just struck because Andy Gronick, his nomination papers were challenged. Hmm. He said that was an attack on black and brown signers.
Yeah.
And so the Republicans gave him an issue. And now listen to what he's saying. He's saying, I'm number one based on ballot status. It's a very short clip. Let's listen to Mr. Gronick.
If you want to win, vote for Andy Gronick on August 14th. I'm easy to find on the ballot because I'm number one, and that's a sign of things to come.
Andy Gronick says, I'm easy to find on the ballot because I'm number one. That's a sign of things to come.
He's also, by the way, I mean, he's trying to appeal to minority voters. His first radio ad is up in Milwaukee on an urban radio station.
He defended Lena Taylor after she was reassigned of finance and all that other stuff. Yeah.
Talks about he's from Milwaukee when he doesn't really live in Milwaukee, but the Milwaukee area.
Right.
He's trying to make a play for that city.
Right. JR, while I was interviewing candidates in Green Bay, you had the good fortune to cover joint finance yesterday.
Yes, I did.
They debated highways. Before we get into what was decided, let's listen to some fascinating back and forth debating where additional federal highway money should go, Foxconn, condition of Wisconsin roads. Let's go to the clip from the joint finance.
This is not the Foxconn Highway. This is a major highway. Tourism is one of our major industries. It's I-94 north-south is critical to our tourism industry to get individuals in and out of Wisconsin. And I used to think that the roads in Wisconsin were much better than the roads in Illinois. Now when I go into Illinois and using I-94, I'm amazed at how the scenario has been changed, that the roads in Illinois are much better than I-94 going in and out of Wisconsin. So this is a road in need of being finished.
Well, I think it's notable that the co-chair of the committee said that the roads are better in Illinois than Wisconsin. I hate that that is true, potentially, because Republicans in Wisconsin have failed to invest in our state roads and highways. And I think it's really important to look at total highway funding, which I believe is the lowest in 10 years. It's been on a steady decline. Can LFB confirm our state highway appropriations are lower than they were when Governor Walker first took office?
You want to talk about Illinois and Wisconsin? I'm very proud of our record of accomplishment, our growth in jobs, our growth in our economy, our record investment in education. We've made huge strides in terms of growing small businesses. Wisconsin is on a roll. And that's why people are coming to Wisconsin.
So imagine if we fixed our state roads in our and cities like Beaver Dam or cities like Portage or Baraboo or Sauk or Monroe or wherever. Imagine that more economic development happening in those parts of the state where it's really, really needed, really, truly needed outside of southeast Wisconsin and outside of Dane County and outside of the Fox Valley. That's where our economy is struggling and our roads are falling apart. And in part, our economy is struggling because the roads suck.
Foxconn would never have moved here in the first place if our roads were in such disarray even before all this investment. So let's stop talking about how terrible our roads are and how that's hurting economic development. Because companies like Foxconn, companies like Green Bay Packaging, or Galloway Milk Company in Little Neenah, Wisconsin, would not be expanding. And by the way, Galloway Milk is one of the largest producers of condensed milk in the country. They would not be expanding if our roads were crumbling. They would be moving out of state.
Now you can say whatever you want, but those potholes will continue to get bigger. They will. You can deny it, but they exist. When they go to fill up their tank and pay their gas tax, and when they go to pay their registration fee each year, they think, well, at least it's going to go to fix my roads and my communities. But that doesn't seem to be true anymore. And the facts bear that out simply by the state highway repairs being in decline every budget since you've been in control. And it's at the lowest it has been in a decade.
Lot to talk about there, JR. You have two members of finance, including the co-chair, saying I-94 is in much worse shape in Wisconsin than in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the same chairman saying this is not the Foxconn Highway. So you were there. Talk about the politics before we talk about the actual decisions that were made.
Well, it's simple. Anytime you add the word Foxconn to anything in the Capitol right now, it's going to get a little bit more heated because Democrats sense an opportunity to push Republicans on a deal that is not proving to be very popular so far with voters. Now, I haven't seen a poll in a couple months. Maybe that's changed. But you see the attention Scott Walker puts on emphasizing the outstate benefits or contracts that people from outside of the Milwaukee area get or whatever. There's a reason for that, because they need to make it more popular outstate. And you saw by the vote, because Howard Markline, who is a vulnerable state senator, yes. Republican state senator from southwestern Wisconsin, top target for Democrats, he voted against the Republican motion to put some of that money, additional federal money, toward 94 North South.
Okay, let's parse that a little bit. The governor, we're talking here about an additional $67.4 million, mm-hmm. an additional in federal highway aid. The governor wanted how much of that, 30 to 30, go?
$37 million
to go to I-94 in Racine County,
$30 correct? Million to bridges, yes.
Right. And so the governor's position was put to a vote, and Markline voted, no, I'm sorry, I have it wrong. Explain the context of Markline's vote.
So Republicans wanted to tweak Walker's plan.
Dial it back from 30 to 22?
So not to get too wonky on you, but the governor's administration had already allocated $22 million of that money toward 94 North South because they have that ability. They wanted to take another $15 million from this unexpected pot of federal money and add it into the 94 stuff.
Yeah.
Republicans on the committee said, no, we're going to keep it at $22 million for 94 North South. Take that $15 million, put about $8 million more into bridge work, the rest in the State Highway Rehabilitation Fund.
Yes.
That basically means instead of doing $30 million on bridges, they're going to do $38 million, mm-hmm. go from 49 bridges to 70. And part of that was, and the reaction you saw from Republicans was talking about the impact at home with this money. They don't want to focus on 94. They don't want to focus on southeastern Wisconsin. They want to focus on what the benefit is back home with this, because there is a perception that I hear about of all the money first being sucked up by Foxconn. Our highway money is going to Foxconn. Our aides are going to Foxconn. And Democrats have the easy contrast of, we put this many dollars into Foxconn. Why couldn't we put it into schools, roads, whatever in your backyard?
Okay, but I want to do the math here. The governor asked for $246 million for I-94. He was given $160, and they added $22 million yesterday.
Well,
I'm
here's
doing
the
math.
Here's
the
thing. The math gets a little fuzzy. It's not Madison math, as some people like to say, but here's what the deal. Back out to the budget. We had $252 in borrowing for 94 North South. The price tag is roughly $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, though, the final price tag until we actually let it out. So you have $250 million in bonding, let's round it off, $160 from this, called the Infra Grant, I guess it's a 410, all right?
Infrastructure, federal
so
funds.
So now we have this little gap.
Yes, that's my point.
But we've been doing these, we have these bond proceeds, that are sale of bonds for road work. We've had proceeds that have built up. We have some revenue there. They're also called bond premiums, where because rates are so low right now, investors will pay you money up front as part of the sale, and in the end, you kind of break even anyway, so it's not a big cost to the state. But we've got this pot of money built up. The administration says they can help fill that gap with that. The $22 million isn't to fill the gap just yet, because we don't know the final price tag.
Yes.
But you have the three pieces, the bonding, the budget, the federal grant that we got, plus those bond proceeds, that's going to supposed to cover this. That's supposed to, you know, we'll see what the final cost is.
Okay, but the takeaway is all the, what you just outlined, these four sources of funds, doesn't pay for I-94 widening and reworking in Racine County. And we don't know yet how we're going to close that gap, because we don't know how big the gap is.
Well, the Walker administration says they can close it with that, this money built up in the bond sale proceeds. They think that they've got the money there, so they're confident of that. An interesting debate came up yesterday was going back and forth of what could we have done if there wasn't Foxconn, mm-hmm. this move toward Foxconn. A heated debate about there's no list of projects that have been delayed, according to the Walker administration, because of Foxconn, but a point from Democrats that, yes, but there's money, stuff that could have been done if we hadn't been doing this. And then we went back and forth about this.
Right. Okay. One more topic. Now we have four people considering the state Supreme Court opening at least four?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but who are the recent additions?
So we have, immediately after Justice Abramson said she wasn't seeking re-election, Lisa Neubauer, the chief judge of the appeals courts,
yes.
She said she was looking at it.
Yep.
Brian Hagedorn, former Walker legal counsel, appointed to the Circuit Court of Appeals. He's been talking about running for a while. Susan Happ, Jefferson County DA, she said she's looking at it. Waukesha County Judge Marie Lazar said she's considering it. We've talked to Milwaukee County Judge David Borowski, he's going to look at it. There are other names who have been floating around who are going to kick the tires. This is a result of when you have an open state or open state Supreme Court seat, lots of folks are going to say, okay, I might run. The question becomes who's going to, you know, actually jump in.
Yeah.
Judge Jennifer Doro from Waukesha County. I talked to her a year ago. She decided that she was not going to run for Supreme Court this year with the Gableman seat open, but she's going to run for sure in 2019. Her husband got a job, takes him out of town a lot. They've got a couple of kids at home. Didn't work out for her. That's the example of when it really comes to it, do you want to take this dive in where it could be an ugly race, there could be a lot of money raised against you, your record be poured over, because this seat is key in control for the court, because liberals now are looking at only being in a 4-3 minority, because once Dalit is sworn in later this summer, goes from 5-2 to 4-3. They have to hold the Abramson seat next spring to have a shot in 2020 to go after Daniel Kelly, a Walker appointee. If they can hold this one and beat him, now it's a liberal majority in the Supreme Court.
Okay, so you don't think, there's no doubt in your mind that there will be more candidates at least seriously considering this race.
I've been told Tammy Jo Hawk, I think is how you say her name, from Green Bay.
Now we're up to 5-6. It sounds like the 10 Dems for Gov.
She's been thinking about, but remember, these are people who are thinking about it.
There's
a big difference between thinking about it and getting in. Like for Susan Happ, she's never been a judge. We have had a recent history in Wisconsin where our voters like people who have judicial experience for Supreme Court. When's the last time a non-judge won a Supreme Court race in Wisconsin? Go back. Like Bill Bablich, he was appointed to the court. He ran as a city lawmaker.
He did run.
But that was like in the 80s?
Yes.
I mean, that's a long time. It's been, in the 18 years I've been here, it's been all judges winning these seats.
Yeah, but let's be clear. This is not an election on November 6th.
Nope.
This election.
April.
April, that's right. Okay, stock picks.
So Jennifer Schilling and Robin Voss, winning is always good. It's also good when you make a pitch to donors of, you should give us money, because we're a good bet. Jennifer Schilling is now 2-for-2 in special elections this year. She's gone from a 2013 minority to an 18-15 one. She now has a credible path to majority in the state Senate this fall, where she can say, hey, outside groups, you should come play in Wisconsin. Scott Fitzgerald told me the day after the first that, look, he didn't go all in because he wanted to blow holes in the November budget, which it might make sense, and long-term, Fitz may be right. But you now have an opening for these outside groups like Holder's group. Like others say, well, geez, there's something going on in Wisconsin. We might want to go play there.
And Obama's group, too.
Which could make his life more difficult than holding that majority come November. Robin Voss, again, did not want to allow a toehold of a blue wave in his chamber.
You bet.
Now, he's also, again, to make the pitch, I am a good investment. The governor's race might be dicey. State Senate might be dicey.
And as of this moment, I have 64 seats in the assembly.
And if Democrats were going to have any shot to retake the majority, okay, they would have to win seats like the 42nd. All right? Now, even if they're 21 better than that, you're not going to win all 21. So a spotlight on this one seat, that's maybe your best shot to win it. And Ann Groves Lloyd is not going to get the resources she got for this race in November because she's not going to be on the pecking list anymore. It's going to drop way down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Robin Voss is going to a powerful position to argue for resources.
Rising Schilling and Voss. Okay, mixed.
The Dem Gov field, we are starting to see these shots, the little kind of punches kind of coming out.
We're less than 2 months away from the August 14th primary.
They're starting to differentiate themselves. The question becomes, are they going to be punches in the face or stabs in the back? There's a difference, I've been told. I heard this great line this week. It's a difference of, is it a policy difference where you can say, I disagree with you and we're going to be face-to-face, or is it the whisper campaign? We raise questions about things beyond policy. Okay. Well, they have a little problem. They have a little issue. Have you heard about this?
Whisper.
Stab in the back.
Right, the anonymous stab.
Again, they've got to get money, get up on the air last month and create some kind of like a profile with voters. But part of the way you do that, because they don't disagree on policy very much.
Right.
This week we had Tony Evers and Flynn going at it a little bit over this proposal to drop.
Drop LEGI pay to the average pay of first-year teachers, which would take it from $50,009 to about $37,000.
Yeah, and then Evers firing back at Flynn about, Walker-like tactics. So, a little bit heated.
We're starting to see some elbows. Okay, falling.
So the challengers, so we talked a little about the dynamic of what was decided. Here's the thing. This is one of the capital secrets about nomination papers. The only way these problems come to light is when you go and look at your opponent's papers and find problems. Mm-hmm. The system is not set up for the Elections Commission to check on themselves. They don't have the resources.
No.
So let's look at Ms. Daniels, okay? She turned in 201 signatures that we are now alleged to have all kinds of fraud that has a criminal investigation going on. If she had turned in 300 signatures, nobody would have looked. Right. That's the reality.
That's very true.
It's one of the secrets of the Capitol. When you are either party, either caucus, you go through who ran from the side and see, oh, they turned in just 15 more. I'll take a look at those and see if I can find a problem. Now, the ones against like Nichols and the gubernatorial campaigns, they're kind of like for a bad headline. But the real ones, when you're really trying to knock somebody off, it's the big red arrow of look here when you're right by the cutoff.
When you have to submit 201, and you when you submit 200, you must, and you submit 201, that opens yourself
and
to the question.
And the fact again is, if she had turned in more, and if these allegations turned true, we would have never known about it because nobody would have checked.
Okay, good point. Have a good week off.
Thank you.
Scott Bauer and I will do Rewind next week. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for June 15.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.